It's Friday, August 21st, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today on the program, we continue our studies in the book of Psalms. We're taking a look at Psalm 5, with part 1 of a message titled, Rejoicing in the Lord.
Have you ever struggled with feeling like nothing is happening in worship? Ever struggled with that? That the whole experience at times feels empty and cold and distant. You ever felt that? We struggled with this. How many times have you even thought, you know, it's just boring?
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
Psalm 5 this morning. Psalm 5, as we turn to this psalm, it's a wonderful psalm. As we come to the table this morning, and sometimes texts of Scripture are a little more challenging than others. If you're visiting with us, we're working through the Psalms. I love to do that for a reason, because it shows the Scripture as a whole. But do remember, if you were going to apply for a job at the post office, and you were going to deliver letters, would you say, what if you said, I only want to deliver those letters that say, Merry Christmas, Happy Birthday, love letters, and you took all the letters that say, we regret to inform you, and threw them in the bushes? You think the postmaster would keep you working very long? He shouldn't. So you see, we have to deliver both sides, don't we? We have to deliver good letters and letters of warning. And let's consider Psalm 5 with that in mind. To the choir master for the flutes, the Psalm of David. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my groaning. Give attention to the sound of my cry, my King and my God. For to you do I pray. O Lord, in the morning you hear my voice. In the morning I prepare a sacrifice for you and watch. For you are not a God who delights in wickedness. Evil may not dwell with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all evildoers. You destroy those who speak lies. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man. But I, through the abundance of your steadfast love, will enter your house. I will bow down toward your holy temple in the fear of you. Lead me, O Lord, in your righteousness because of my enemies. Make your way straight before me. For there is no truth in their mouth. Their inmost self is destruction. Their throat is an open grave. They flatter with their tongue. Make them bear their guilt, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels because of the abundance of their transgressions. Cast them out, for they have rebelled against you. But let all who take refuge in you rejoice. Let them ever sing for joy. And spread your protection over them. And let those who love your name, that those who love your name may exult in you. For you bless the righteous, O Lord. You cover him with favor as with a shield. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. I remember being in college and my parents had come to visit, and so I was excited to bring them to the church that I was attending in college. That day in that church that I decided to attend, the first 20 minutes were rock and roll music. The pastor decided on a whim that day that he didn't want to preach. His message was, take a break, and he himself took a break. I'll never forget, we went home that day. I was a bit embarrassed. And my father said to me, son, I raised you better than that. I needed to hear that. You know what was the most troubling about that whole event as a young person? I sat there for 6 months in that. And I didn't see it. What are we doing today? Why'd you come? Why'd you get up this morning? Why'd you put on nice clothes? Did you do it because you just knew you should be here? Why are you here this morning? What drove you here? Was it because you've always done it and this is the thing you do? What did you seek in coming? What's your purpose? Did you come to experience something? What did you come to experience? Did you think about that at all? What is it? Why are we here this morning in the Escondido United Reformed Church? Well, all of this is answered for us this morning in Psalm 5. That's why I love Psalm 5. Psalm 5 answers those questions. And it's really amazing how this whole psalm begins. It begins with a cry. It begins with something we wouldn't expect. It begins with a cry. Lord, hear my cry. I'm groaning. I'm sorrowful. I want everyone to look at verse 7 this morning. In verse 7, this is what we read. But as for me, I will come into your house in the multitude of your mercy. I will, you know what worship means, right? The word that God chose for worship means, I will bow down in your presence. This is what I'm going to come do. And then he cries out, as I come to worship this morning, lead me in your righteousness. This is what I'm asking of you. I'm asking you to lead me this morning, to guide my paths, to make them straight, as we sung out. This is a psalm, and the whole purpose of the psalm this morning is David asking that he would have a proper reverence and a proper fear of this God to whom he is coming to worship. That he would have a proper reverence and a proper fear. Lord, help me to see things as you see them. Help me to understand things as you have defined them in your word. Help me in worship to honor you and to worship you the way that you desire to be worshipped. Psalm 5 is so interesting to me, and I really gave a lot of time to reflect on just what is happening here. Psalm 5 is so interesting to me because it's not a psalm that is exactly for the act of worship. It's a psalm that is a preparation for worship. He's preparing his heart. It's a psalm preparing your heart to come into the house of the Lord. That's why I want you to look at verse 7 and to see that he's praying early in the morning. It's a morning psalm. He's praying, anticipating coming. Now, it's not the kind of psalm we would really expect for coming into the worship of the Lord, at least if we're putting it on our terms, in our day, in 2012. Because right at the beginning of the superscription, you read it saying, this is to the choir master and all the flutes. And you're thinking, whoa, boy, here comes the praise band, right? That's not what we have. In the superscription, you'll see that. And then right after, you have something shocking. Give ear to my prayer, to my words, O Lord. Consider my groaning. Give attention to the sound of my cry, my King and my God, for to you do I pray. Now, if in verse 7 he is anticipating coming into the house of the Lord, he's asking, this is what I will do when I come. I will bow down. I will reverence you. Here is David preparing his heart. In verse 3, he says, I will pray to you in the morning. In the morning, I prepare a sacrifice for you. And I will look up to you. I'll look up. Prayer. It's not always like this. Sometimes it's like this. This is the language of the priests in the morning who would prepare sacrifices on the altar, wouldn't they? And he's thinking here as we sing, my heart and altar, and I love the flame. He is praying to the Lord. He is preparing his heart for coming to the worship of the Lord. Now, I don't know how you prepare for coming to the Lord's house. But the first thing that strikes me this morning is how earnest this prayer is, how alive this prayer is, how devoted and concentrated and fervent this prayer is to the Lord. It is focused and it's passionate and it's real. It's not the kind of prayer where he's just going through the motions and it's just sort of a cold routine. I'm listening to this prayer, and I can picture David, arms outstretched, bowing the head, but thinking a lot about the Lord, praying to Him in fervent desire that all that he has would be given to him and that he would understand things the way that he should. It's sincere. You ever desired that, to have every square inch of who you are to love Christ, to delight in him, to know him, to commune with him? This is a man after God's own heart, remember. And he is so fixated on the Lord in this psalm. It's just the here epitome of devotion, you know. Serious, persistent, fervent, unwavering prayer filled with trust and confidence in the Lord. He's preparing. Have you ever struggled with feeling like nothing is happening in worship? Ever struggled with that? That the whole experience at times feels empty and cold and distant. You ever felt that? We struggled with this. How many times have you even thought, you know, it was just boring? There was no energy in what we're doing. Where's the energy? And maybe you think about those who seem to have so much energy in what they're doing. And we've often made the assumption in that struggle that the problem is with worship itself, haven't we? That's what we've made the assumption. And so we've tried to fix this. And we have said, well, we need this for the sermons, or we need this for what we do in this part of the worship. The experience of the whole thing needs to be a little bit greater. I've struggled with that. Oh, I've struggled with that. How much time did you give to prepare yourself this morning for worship? When you prayed, assuming that you did, coming into the Lord's house, how did you prepare your hearts? What did you ask of the Lord? What did you do? What burdened you? What troubled your hearts? What did you feel? I ask that because it will have a bearing on what you're doing this morning, on your experience this morning. I never grasped this as a child, as a young person, what the worship of God was. I really didn't. I confession time, if I may. I know I'm not supposed to do that, but I'm going to do it. As a child, I remember numerous times in pews like this, in a church like this growing up, that I was rolling around on the ground and my dad would grab me, pick me up, and put me back in the pew. And then as a teenager, I would sit there. And I'd, of course, been out the night before with my friends. No preparation. I would come and I would sit in the pew and you would see the Gordon kid do the Bob thing. I fell asleep. And then my dad would take his big knuckle and jam it right into the middle of my leg and I'd go home with a Charlie. It wasn't better watching anyone else. I saw everything in church. I saw mints drop on the floor and roll up one time to the front of the pulpit. I saw people walk in late. I saw newsletters being read. I saw people knitting. And if the pastor was long-winded that day, oh boy, a series of escalations of coughs and sneezing and getting up to go to the bathroom would happen. Here's my conclusion, beloved. I, and many others in the life of the church, not all, had no idea what we were doing. Church, for many, had become a social club for the elite. And so because of increased dissatisfaction, the question started going out, hey, we need to dress this up a little bit better. We need to help engage people a little bit better. And so you live this. I live this. We went through the worship wars. I remember reading David Fettes' article in the Christian Reformed Church years ago. And he said something, I kept this article. I always thought it was an amazing article. He said, "We forget that we are in the presence of a holy and an awesome God. Many churches go out of their way to make worship more inviting and more exciting. We preachers strive to weave something colorful into our sermons to get people's interest. But interest in whom? The living God or the clever preacher?" People go to church out of habit. They expect to be finished on time, and they consider it a success if a good time was had by all. He says, "Do you realize when you go to church, you're entering a danger zone? If you get careless, it could destroy you in a moment." I kept that article. I raise all this morning because I just didn't grasp this. I didn't understand this. I didn't get it. For my whole beginning part of my existence under the sun, I didn't know what was going on. And here I am as a pastor now, and I grasp this, seeing the Psalms. I see what the Lord is telling us about coming into His presence. And here we are this morning, and we've gathered, and we're coming to receive the Word, and we're going to partake of the body and the blood of Christ. Something that meant so much to the Lord, He said you could eat and drink judgment on yourself if you don't discern it. I didn't write that. He wrote that. Here's my question. Do you think we've missed something in worship today because our priorities are wrong? Psalm 5 is David's morning prayer preparing him. And it answers the question of why Chris Gordon needs to be here and why you need to be here. No preparation probably means we're lacking in understanding why we even are here this morning. Lord, hear from you. And it brings us to the great question of this psalm. Why is David crying? And what is he anticipating in coming to the Lord's house? What's burdening David? I want to know, don't you? Because all the commentators are sitting here. Calvin said, we're not even really told. Nothing is expressly told as to why David is burdened. It's interesting because the two previous psalms are very specific about that. Psalm 3 says, enemies are attacking David. Psalm 4 says, they're slandering David. But this psalm's a little bit different, isn't it? Why is he crying out? Why is he so burdened early in the morning? This psalm is unique because he provides not something specific to his life, but the greatest problem that all of mankind faces. And do you know what that is? It's God Himself. Look at verse 4. And here's the reason: for you are not a God who delights in wickedness. Evil may not dwell with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all workers of iniquity. You destroy those who speak lies. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man. I've never seen that on a bumper sticker. That's the worst news I've ever heard. That's distressing. You notice the progression there? It starts with, you hate wickedness. Evil cannot be in your presence. The boastful will not stand. You hate them. You will destroy them. Now, I could try to explain that away today, and I could try to make that nice, but it doesn't go away. Now, I wonder, have we really felt the weight of that anymore today? Have we really felt the weight of a statement like that? You know, we used to hear that statement. I heard it all the time growing up. God hates the sin, but He loves the sinner. Remember that? That was the common lingo for me as a child. But what makes this psalm so potent, what makes this cry so powerful, is that David realized we're not sinners because we sin. We sin because we're sinners. Do you think we take that seriously today? I wonder if we become totally unmoved by the love of God and untouched by the love of God today in the Christian church. This is all we've heard. This is all we've been told. Could we ever imagine a God who hates? If you'll agree that He doesn't change, could we ever imagine a God who hates? Let me go a little further. Do we believe there's a hell? No. Really believe that. Do we really believe that God is sending people there and that it's His hell? It's not the devil's hell. It's His hell. And that anyone who doesn't have a covering is going there. We shift. It's uncomfortable. Do you know what's happened to David? He's been out in the world and he has felt the sorrow of everything. And the problem that he is lamenting in this psalm, the problem he's crying about is sin. He has known its curse. He has felt it. He has seen the awful effects of it in this life. And here's what he's saying. I understand what you're like, Lord. I understand your holiness. I get your greatness. And that you cannot stand. No sinner can stand in your presence and live. I feel that. I understand that. I believe that. And I groan over it. And I'm anticipating going into the house of the Lord. And Lord, hear my prayer. Hear my cry. I'm praying to you because I'm broken up about this. When I think about your justice and your holiness and that you can't excuse sin and that no one can stand, I'm groaning. I'm groaning. When I consider your awesome, blazing holiness, remember Isaiah got a little glimpse of that and the first thing he did was cover. And the first thing he said is, woe is me, I'm undone. I'm breaking apart. I'm disintegrating in your presence. I fall right into despair. My concern is that we're so desensitized to these things, they just don't affect us anymore. They don't affect us. Can we even hear it? I was reading Ezekiel the other day, and it's interesting that God took Ezekiel into the worship of the Lord, and He wanted Ezekiel to consider what was going on in the house of Israel. And He says, I want you to look, Israel, and I want you to look at what they're doing and see why it's driven me right out of the sanctuary. And so Ezekiel says, I went in and I looked, and he says, I saw this infuriating image at the beginning of the gate. And then he brought me to the inner court, and there was a hole in the wall, so I dug right in the middle of the hole, and I looked into it, and I saw all sorts of idols in the house of the Lord.
That's all the time we have for you today. We thank you for joining us here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. We hope you'll join us again next time for part two of this message from Pastor Chris. Thanks again. Until next time, God bless.